The film Donnie Darko was released shortly after September 11, 2001, and flopped at the box office, but it developed a cult following with the help of its DVD release and midnight screenings at theaters around the country. Now there's a new director's cut that is being shown in select theaters, featuring 20 minutes of footage that wasn't in the original version. My guest is Richard Kelly, the screenwriter and director. Jake Gyllenhaal stars in the film as Donnie Darko, a young man who is alienated in his suburban home and high school. He has visions, which may be a symptom of the emotional disorder for which he is supposed to be taking medication, but it may also be a sign that the world is coming to an end. The movie is a coming-of-age story that includes elements of science fiction. Drew Barrymore is one of the film's producers and plays one of Donnie's teachers. Maggie Gyllenhaal plays Donnie's older sister, Elizabeth. The film is set in 1988. Here's Donnie, his sisters, and their parents sitting at the dining room table.
I'm voting for Dukakis.
Well, maybe when you have children of your own who need braces and you can't afford them because half of your husband's paycheck goes to the federal government, you'll regret that.
My husband's paycheck?
Oh.
Anyway, I'm not going to squeeze one out till I'm like 30.
Will you still be working at the Yarn Barn? Because I hear that's a really great place to raise children.
That's really funny.
No, I think a year of partying's enough. She'll be going to Harvard next fall.
Mom, I haven't even gotten in yet.
Do you honestly think Michael Dukakis will provide for this country till you're ready to squeeze one out?
Yeah, I do.
When can I squeeze one out?
Not until eighth grade.
Excuse me.
Donnie, you're such a dick.
Whoa, Elizabeth. A little hostile there. Maybe you should be the one in therapy. Then Mom and Dad can pay someone $200 an hour to listen to all your thoughts. So we don't have to.
Okay. You want to tell Mom and Dad why you stopped taking your medication?
You're such a ass.
What?
Please.
Did you just call me a ass?
Elizabeth, that's enough.
When Donnie Darko was first released, just a few weeks after September 11th, it earned $515,000. Boy, is that ever nothing.
it literally must have hurt. Yeah. It makes me cringe anytime this film is written about in print media. In the first sentence, it's always box office bomb, you know, or they mention that. That dreaded gross of $515,000, and it's frustrating that it's always the box office grosses are ultimately what your sort of film is judged upon, and it really didn't catch on, and people really didn't notice the film until it was released on DVD in March of 2002.
Would you describe the basic story of Donnie Darko? There's something for you.
Yeah. Well, do you have an hour? How long is this show? I think the basic story is it's a science fiction comic book fable that takes place in autumn of the year 1988 in the American suburbs. It's the story of a troubled teenager who embarks on a journey into what is potentially a parallel universe. He is guided through this journey by a enigmatic rabbit named Frank. How was that?
That's pretty good, actually. Well, that's pretty good. You know, one of the characters, the character played by Jenna Malone, says to Donnie Darko that his name sounds like the name in a superhero comic. Did you choose that name? Did you come up with that name for that reason?
Absolutely. I mean, the name was the first thing that popped into my head. That name, to me, was specifically chosen to be kind of an archetype, I guess, for any dysfunctional teenager, any teenager who feels alienated or disenfranchised. And I wanted to sort of create a comic book character that emulated a lot of the types of teenagers that go through the emotions of isolation and feeling separation anxiety, or they're experiencing what they think might be mental illness.
Now, the story of Donnie Darko is the story of, you know, a boy in high school who's really alienated from the school, doesn't have much in the way of friends, is even the loner in his own family. But he also seems to have some kind of mental illness. His psychiatrist says he has daytime hallucinations. He takes medicine for whatever the problem is, though he doesn't seem to want to take the medicine. And at the same time, he seems to have entered a time warp. And we don't really know whether the time warp is something that is really a kind of symptom of his mental illness, you know, another hallucination, or whether this is like just the science fiction part of the movie and there really is a time warp because it's a science fiction movie. So I think a lot of people who see the movie end the movie by saying, well, did this really happen? Is it his imagination? Is it a schizophrenic hallucination? Is it science fiction? Do you want us to know what you really think of that, or do you want us to just think about it and talk it through ourselves without any help from you?
Well, the very nature of this story is that ultimately that there is ambiguity that will always exist, and to take on this kind of subject matter and to claim to have all the answers would be kind of presumptuous of me. But
no, wouldn't you? You're the author. Yeah.
Well, you know, well, that's a bit more.
It's not life's mysteries; it's your screenplay.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of both, and I think that the very design of it is such that there will always be ambiguity. But with the director's cut, I think what you're seeing is this is really more of a science fiction film, and I think part of the theatrical cut was the information that I had to withhold from the audience perhaps validated the theory of mental illness, that maybe the misconception that this film is about mental illness, when for me it is about a kid who is gifted or exposed to supernatural phenomena, who is transported into a new dimension and is given superpowers and is not mentally ill at all and is really being given placebos by his therapist because she is somehow aware that he is perhaps someone gifted with a supernatural ability, and she almost feels as though if she were to give him medication, she might be damaging. You don't want to put Superman on Ritalin. He might lose his powers, or he might fly into a wall. You know, so it's a bit of that when you see in the director's cut that this is hopefully putting the theory out there that maybe that the mentally ill are perhaps exposed to phenomena that we aren't aware of, and that there really is no answer and no true definition of schizophrenia or what that is, and it's trying to create an alternate theory for what it all could mean, I guess.
But getting back to your new director's cut of Donnie Darko, how different is the new ending from the original ending, without giving away what the ending is?
Well, ultimately, the ending is the same. It's just there's a new twist, I think, to the ending in the sense that perhaps not all of Donnie Darko takes place in the year 1988. Perhaps what you're seeing is a glimpse of 1988 from another time, and I don't want to give away what that time might be.
Was time travel something that always appealed to you?
Well, I mean, I think you grow up reading a lot of science fiction. It's time travel movies are always fascinating. They were always fascinating to me. I remember when I saw Back to the Future, it was a pretty life-changing moment. When I saw Chris Marker's La Jetée and then Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys, it had a big impact on me. And I think I was always fascinated with, I guess, the concept of time travel. I think any great science fiction author has always tried to tackle that subject matter. I think you see it as being a really reoccurring theme.
Your movie, Donnie Darko, has a pretty amazing cast. Donnie is played by Jake Gyllenhaal. You've got his sister Maggie Gyllenhaal playing his sister. And then you've got Jenna Malone, and she plays his good friend, a girlfriend. Plus Patrick Swayze has a small part as the self-help guru who teaches the kids in high school, and Catherine Ross from The Graduate plays the psychiatrist. It's a really interesting cast, and I'm wondering, how did you get these people on such a small budget? And because it's a combination of things you've done here. You've cast well-known people on a teeny budget, and then you have people who were unknown or barely known in starring roles who, you know, are now much bigger stars.
Well, I think it all comes down to hopefully the quality of the screenplay that attracts talent. I think with a first-time director, there's always the risk that this person will be a complete idiot and that he will lead the cast astray and the film will be a disaster. And it's a very big risk for a known, well-established actor to take a chance to appear in a film directed by a first-time director. And luckily, Drew Barrymore signed on to the film. She was the first one, and as executive producer, she put her name on the film and committed to it. And I think that made a lot of the other actors comfortable in making the decision to work with me. Then I was 25 years old, so there's a very high probability that I was completely full of it, and maybe I still am. But it's a risk, and ultimately, it all comes back to the screenplay, which thankfully we had a screenplay, and it ended up being the blueprint, and it's why we're all here, really.
When you were making Donnie Darko, and you were directing Patrick Swayze and Jake Gyllenhaal and Catherine Ross, Jenna Malone, did you feel like a fraud? Because it was like,
yes.
you were so young and so
yes.
inexperienced,
I still am.
and here you were, having everybody under your direction. It must be a kind of frightening first-time experience.
Yeah, I think there's no time to really sit there and have a nervous breakdown. You just kind of...
lucky
just
break
sort of
for
just,
that, right?
You just keep moving, you know? And you just huddle yourself to sleep at night and curl up in a ball and just cry. No, you don't have time. You're directing a film. You can either rise to the occasion and delegate authority to a bunch of teamsters and a bunch of people there looking at you like you're a little bastard who's 25 years old and got this opportunity of a lifetime, and or you can self-destruct and the whole thing can become a disaster. It's you have to rise to the occasion. It's literally like being up on stage and having to perform.
Richard Kelly wrote and directed Donnie Darko. The director's cut is showing at select theaters and will be opening in more theaters over the next couple of months.